She knew that he was working all things together for her good
and his glory.
I wonder if there's anybody here this morning that would be prepared to tell, I'll put in brackets, the untruth, that life up until this stage has been quite an easy ride. Haven't been any big bumps, and actually, I haven't had any problems. One step further. I wonder if there's anybody in this room this morning that can say, my Christian life, since I came to meet Jesus, I have been soaring in the clouds. I've never had a dark day or a difficult day or a day when I even had the slightest doubt. And if you're one of those people, and now I'm being serious, I really would love to see you afterwards because I need some counsel. Okay? We all have those difficult times. And I am sure that most of us, if not all of us, have said at some time, either because of our own situation or somebody else's, where is God now? Many years ago, somebody we knew in South Africa, Afrikaans gentleman, and in the wintertime, which there is July, that's the main sort of best hunting season. And this is now many years ago when his son was a little boy, it's probably 30, 40 years ago. And him and a friend went out early one morning, right out in the bush in the northern part of South Africa, to hunt. And looking for what we would call deer, what they call their buck. And you've heard of the springbok, and there's other bigger animals as well. And his little son really wanted to come with him. He insisted on coming with him. So he said, okay, you can come with, but you need to be very, very quiet. You don't have to disturb the animals. This is early in the morning. The sun has hardly come, just before the sun came up, and they go out, and they're walking along, and they're heading towards a bit of a valley, because they know there will be deer grazing in the valley. And this the valley sort of goes down in a couple of steps or ridges. So the little boy is behind the two men, and he's looking around and finding this all very interesting and a little bit frightening and so on. Because it's, you know, it's still a bit dark. And there are the two men walking closely together, not saying a word. And he took his eyes off them for a moment. Everything, remember, is dead still. Can't even hear the birds yet. And what happened is the two men walked over a ridge, and then to get a good look, they just hunkered down with their rifles. And the little boy looked up, and he saw nobody. He looked around. He's in a huge open space. He hasn't a clue where he is. He can't see his dad. And he shouts, Daddy! Splits the silence. Okay? And his dad leaps up and said, what now? And of course, any animals nearby would have said, that's a little... You see, suddenly, when he looked, he didn't see his dad. And sometimes we look and we don't see our father. Reminds me, Billy Graham, I remember many, many years ago, preaching at Madison Square Garden in New York. And he told a story of a man who was standing on one of the main bridges, over the Hudson River there, wanting to jump off, commit suicide. And he says, a policeman came along and said, what are you doing? He said, well, there's nothing to live for. And so he said, just come and stand next to me. He said, you give me three good reasons why you should jump off this bridge. So the man gave him three good reasons, and they both jumped off. Okay? Now see, people feel like that. Where is God now? Where is this strength and peace and grace that I once knew that seems to have gone? What have I done? And the message I really want to bring to you this morning on this Palm Sunday, when people are waving their palm crosses and we remember people saying, Hosanna to the King of Kings, let's rejoice. And it is a wonderful time to think that. There are people that are puzzled and saying, what's all this about? And so I just want to bring to you a verse from Isaiah. And I'm going to put it on the screen. But just before you do, Steve, let me just say this to you. This particular prophecy or section from Isaiah is spoken in prophecy again about the time when the children of Israel will return from exile to Jerusalem. You may remember that they turn their face away from God for decades, and eventually they weaken so much that Nebuchadnezzar, the great Babylonian king, came in and took the city and took all the qualified and bright people off to Babylon and left a few in Jerusalem. And one of those people you would remember was Daniel, who was taken off. 70 years they were in exile in Babylon. But God promised that he would bring them back. And he did, under Ezra and Nehemiah. But it wasn't easy. When they came back to Jerusalem, they found a desecrated temple. They had to start sorting it out. The walls were all broken down, so they had to start building the walls around Jerusalem. While they were doing all that, there were people who lived in that area who opposed them, who tried to trick them, who tried to do all manner of things to undo what they were doing. Now they've just been brought back. The promise has come true. They've now been brought back. Thank goodness we could sing hallelujah, Hosanna. But it's tough. And there's opposition. And they're saying, what's all this about? And that's why I want to bring to you this verse. Thanks, Steve. So do not fear, I am with you. Do not be dismayed, I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Isn't that a tremendous promise? Let's just look at it quickly and then I'm finished. Do not fear. Ask yourself this question. What do you fear? This morning, if somebody said to you, if you were sitting in front of a counselor and they said, write down your three major fears, what would they be? And God is saying, there's no need to fear because I am with you. Who is I? The one who created this universe. The one who saved you. You wouldn't be sitting here this morning unless you were either seeking God or you found him and you want to worship him. I, that God, am with you. You mightn't be able to see me or feel me or hear me, but I'm here. Okay? Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. Let me tell you, let me just share my heart with you. Despite my accent, you know, I was born here. This is the country I love. This is the country I want to succeed. I have been dismayed over these past 2 weeks about this whole Brexit scenario. Will people please make up their minds? Will things please happen? Do you hear what I'm saying? I feel it because I long that people in this country would turn back to the Lord. Okay? I've been dismayed. There's been a couple of other things that have happened that I've also been dismayed about. So if you had to write down 2 things, what are you currently dismayed about? What would they be? All right? Please notice, same two words that come in front of fear come in front of dismayed. Do not be dismayed. All right? For I am your God. Don't be afraid, because I'm with you. Don't be dismayed, for I am your God. You don't have another God. You've got the one who actually is in control of everything. Doesn't stop there. You could say, well, so what, Lord? Ah, well, this is what. I will strengthen you. That could be mentally, physically, spiritually. And I will help you. Oh, thank goodness, I need some help. Got a knock on my door on Friday. It's our neighbor. A couple that have moved in only a little while ago. She says, I've got a problem. Toilet's leaking. Okay? So, I spent a couple of hours trying to help her to fix it. Okay? What did I do? She knocked on my door saying, can you help me here? I helped her. God is saying, I will strengthen you, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Not just any right hand, a hand that is righteous. In other words, everything good, my hand is the giver of everything good. So to finish, and then Debbie is going to speak, I want to just put up something that you are probably aware of. And all I want you to do is read it through quietly. Can you all read that?
I was told this morning to only speak for 10 minutes. I've tried very hard to keep it to 10. Just looking at that footprints in the sand, it kind of says quite a lot to me about what I'm going to tell you about today. I've always kind of wanted to share my testimony of what happened to Cliff and I last year. Now my notes have gone. I just wanted to share with you, I can't get my notes up now, this is why you don't bring, I have them there, just a minute ago. Sorry, I just wanted to share with you our quite disastrous year in a way. But during every step of the way, I knew God was with me. He was with me every single step of that way. So 2018 started really well, celebrated the new year in, thought everything was going hunky-dory. We're looking forward to the birth of our new granddaughter, which wasn't going to be until June. Our younger son had moved back home to live with us. He'd broken up with his girlfriend, and everything seemed to be going quite well. So we get to June, 20th of June, in actual fact. We get a phone call from my son saying they're on the way to hospital. Sorry, 20th of May, not June. 20th of May. We're on our way to hospital. Baby's on the way, which was 6 weeks earlier than the planned actual date. So we waited and waited, and then all of a sudden we got a call. This call was not the call we had been anticipating. This call was from our younger son. He'd gone off to a festival in Hastings, and his words were, I'm sorry, Mum. I've done it again. I've gone too far this time. My heart is racing. The ambulance men said, "This is a warning to you." What more could we do? We dashed off to Hastings, kind of knowing what we were going to meet, actually. When we arrived, there he was, pacing up and down outside the hospital. So here we go again. 4 years previous, we'd had the same old, same old. Cocaine was the problem. He was quite paranoid. He was almost psychotic, wandering up and down and yelling. And we said, "Well, what's happening?" He didn't seem to know what the hell was happening, actually. So eventually we managed to persuade him to stay, and we saw a doctor, and basically she didn't seem to have much sympathy, actually. She just said, "You've got to stop." But the resounding thing that she said to us, which really hit us as parents, was, "Your son's 30. Don't you think it's about time he stops relying on you to pick up the pieces?" This was the start of a very painful journey for us. The next day, our son called us from Florida. His wife had given birth to a beautiful, healthy baby, little girl, Harper Rose. We were full of pride, but there was a dull ache in our hearts. Philip's behaviour escalated. His thoughts were completely erratic. He was upsetting his work colleagues. He was full of paranoia. He thought people were out to get him, to kill him. At night time, he didn't sleep. He sang, he shouted, he paraded up and down the stairs, he went out down to the local lane, shouting and screaming. We got very little sleep. The psychosis was getting worse. His mind was incredibly troubled. With little sleep and so much tension, Cliff went to the doctors to get some advice and some sleeping tablets. His blood pressure was taken and he was told it was a little high. The only advice the doctor could give about Philip was we needed to get him to A&E. That was a big joke, really. There's no way we could get him to A&E. He was in complete denial. There was nothing wrong with him. Absolutely nothing wrong from him. In this time, his behaviour just escalated. On my return one evening, he was completely deranged. He explained how he had planned to take a person's life. It's a person who'd previously worked with, who'd actually said he was going to take Philip's life. It was at this point that we lay in bed, trying to work out what we were going to do. Just didn't know how we were going to get into A&E. We knew that's what we had to do, but we didn't know how to do it. He had been in touch with somebody who he trusted, who was actually a police officer at the time. I thought, well, I'll give her a call and see if she can help. Amazingly, she turned up, she talked to Philip, and managed to persuade him to come in her car, and she took him off to casualty. Thankfully, when we got to the hospital, we had an amazing mental health nurse who was on duty. And originally, they were going to send him home with just some tablets. I said, I just can't do this again. I can't have him at home. He listened to Cliff and I and realised that actually we needed to start the procedures for sectioning. If anybody's been through this, they know it's a very, very difficult procedure. They have to have two psychiatrists from different areas, and they have to have a mental nurse, and they all have to actually agree, they have to have long conversations with the patient, and they have to come to agreement that they're all on the same footing, that this person really does need sectioning. So we had a whole day in hospital. Twice Philip got out of the hospital, wandered off, the police were called, we had some terrible times with the police, and the second time he did it, by then the papers were on their way for sectioning. And sadly, Cliff saw him being brought down in the middle of the road by the police. Awful, awful scene. He was sectioned on that Friday, almost 4 weeks after picking him up from Hastings. Cliff and I were in pieces. We made that decision on that day. He'd never come back home to live again. That weekend was Penn Tucker's ordination in Seaton. I just knew we had to get away. Cliff had been suffering with some very uncomfortable headaches, and we put this down to the stress. I booked a B&B, and Fiona and Sean, they kindly offered us a light lunch before the ordination. It was a lovely reception we had, and Di and Ivan were there, and we prayed. This weekend was so uplifting. Cliff really felt moved by the love from people that he hardly knew. 2 weeks after Philip was sectioned, we were due to fly to Florida for Cliff to meet his new granddaughter. Luckily, in the meantime, I'd actually gone out for 4 days. Cliff very bravely had said to me, just go and see your granddaughter while she's brand new and tiny. And he was left with all the madness that was going on with Philip. He was not sleeping well and his headaches were still occurring. And Philip was still very demanding, even though he was sectioned. He was making lots of phone calls to us and he was demanding lots of things. And Cliff just still couldn't stop worrying about him and running to him. It's causing us lots and lots of arguments between us. It was just a terrible, terrible time. Amazingly, Vanessa helped my sister. God was there again. There he was. Vanessa was helping out, trying to sort of lead us and help us and trying to show us the way. The doctor decided she'd test Cliff's blood pressure. And surprisingly, it was high. And she said, well, you know, hopefully you'll be all right. So as we were about to fly out to Florida, Cliff thought, I'll go back to get some more sleeping tablets. He went back to get the sleeping tablets and the doctor said, oh, I'll try and test your BP again and see if you're okay. Sadly, his blood pressure was sky high. She rang the hospital. She told him that he was on his way. He rang me and she said, you're very unlikely to be flying to Florida. So at this point, I went to pieces. I was crying. I was praying. I was worried about Cliff. I was thinking, my goodness, is he having a heart attack? Is he having a stroke? What the hell is going on? The hospital did masses of tests and said, no, we think it's all down to the stress you've been under. You know, we'll give you some blood pressure tablets. You'll be fine. Go and enjoy yourself. So off we went. 2 days later, we were on our way to Florida. It was a great relief for both of us. But on our way from the two and a half hour drive from Miami to my son's, Cliff noticed his eyesight was getting worse. It was getting kind of blurred. And he put that down to tiredness. We had quite a late night, and when Cliff woke in the morning, his left eye was partially closed. This was a great worry because it was a Sunday and we're in America. So we kind of said, right, okay, tomorrow morning we need to go and see a doctor. Fortunately, my son has lots of contacts in the business he was in and knew a local doctor, local GP. We got an appointment with her and went off to see her. And she was incredibly worried. You know, she hinted possibly a stroke. She said, but it could be something else. I'm wondering. She said, needs an MRI. Again, we were trying to get that MRI done really quickly. It was leading up to Independence Day and everything was closing down. So we then had to wait to the Thursday to have that MRI done. We heard no more until the Thursday when the doctor called us and told us that Cliff had a large tumour in his pituitary and it was probably benign, but he needed to see a neurosurgeon. Again, Simon had contacts. He found a neurosurgeon and we were slipped into his busy day of appointments. He took one look at the MRI and said Cliff required urgent surgery. He could no longer do this procedure because we thought he could. We had a 2 hour drive to Tampa General. At this point, I was on autopilot. I just thought, gosh, we've just got to get to the hospital. We've just got to get there. My poor son, he's got a brand new baby, 6 weeks old. His poor wife must have been wondering what is going on. You know, they've arrived at this glorious moment and it's not a glorious moment. We get to the hospital and all of a sudden there's all these doctors everywhere. And I think what it really hit me when they said, we're just waiting to get your room ready in intensive care. Intensive care. Okay, this is really serious now. God intervened in so many ways during this whole time. We're in Tampa. We've got nowhere to stay. We know we're going to be there for quite a few days. Simon called a friend. The friend wasn't staying in Tampa at the time, had a lovely house and said, the house is yours. You stay here. So that night we arrived really late. They'd given us instructions on where to find the keys. Couldn't find the keys. All of a sudden, Simon gets a text. We're watching you on webcam. We can see you trying to find the key. Oh, thank the Lord, I can't get in. And they told us where the key was and we got in. It felt quite spooky going into someone's house, especially that I didn't know. Of course, we didn't sleep much, really sleepless night. We got back into the hospital really early in the morning. Doctors were all around. Cliff's second eye was now closing. I was now really feeling quite panicky. And I think I showed that to the doctors. They were as calm as cucumber. "Don't worry, ma'am, we've got it under control," they said. Next thing we knew, we had doctors and nurses everywhere, and they were getting Cliff ready for surgery. They told us it would be a 4-hour operation. It's all very grand, if you can put it that way, in America. It's incredible, the machinery and everything else they have, the equipment, it's amazing. Cliff had a number, and they told us to come back in 2 hours because part of the first procedure was ear, nose and throat surgeons, then it was the neurosurgeons, and they would come and report to us how things had gone in the first 2 hours. We didn't know what to do with ourselves, really, so we went off to a local brewery. What a place to go. Sat there crying and talking and just praying and just, you know, hoping all was going to go well. We went back after the said 2 hours, and the receptionist said, "Oh, good news. Your husband's going to be out of surgery soon. Went much better than we anticipated. The ear, nose and throat surgeon's going to be here to see you in a minute." It's all a bit strange, isn't it? We don't get that in England. Down came the ear, nose and throat surgeon and said, "Oh, ma'am, we are so delighted. We cannot tell you. The tumour just literally slipped away as we went in, completely slipped away. Doesn't usually happen. We're all ecstatic." The neurosurgeons then came out. Believe it or not, on their phone, they showed us the procedure, showed us where his tumour had been, and said, you know, "We can't believe it." And they gave us a big hug. God obviously had some plan here. He must have done. We could not believe that this was happening, you know. Cliff was cared for amazingly in this hospital. They just loved this polite English gentleman. All the nurses were actually fighting over who was going to have Cliff to look after. They really were. One nurse said to Cliff, I can't think of their words they say in America, but I'm not kidding you, you know, we really love your family. That was just so uplifting, I can't tell you. A day after Cliff's surgery, I spoke with my sister. She'd taken over all of Philip's communications and what was going on. She was working quite closely with Vanessa, thank the Lord. And unbeknown to me, he'd appealed against his section. I didn't know people could do this. He's mentally deranged. It's not possible even looking after himself. And if he wins that, he can just leave, just like that. At that point, fear was in me. I can't tell you the fear I had in me, because I knew if my son left that hospital, he would go home and he would break into our house. And I knew he'd do a lot of damage. I've heard about people having actual panic attacks, but I've never actually experienced a major panic attack. And I know when you do first aid, people tell you how to manage that. I went into a major panic attack. I couldn't find my son. He'd gone off somewhere. He was actually buying Cliff some silly little bits and pieces in the shop downstairs. One of the nurses saw me and said, "Are you all right?" I said, "No." I said, "I knew I needed to breathe into a bag. Get me a bag. Get me a bag." And at that point, I've never felt anything quite like it. I thought I was having a stroke. My face was tingling everywhere, my hands and legs. I couldn't stand up and I couldn't catch my breath. The nurses were so worried. All of a sudden, I had a team of people around me saying, "We need to get her down to casualty." And my poor son standing behind me with his hand on my shoulder saying, "Mum, breathe. Mum, breathe. Mum, breathe." I can't believe his composure in this whole thing. It was just absolutely amazing. I knew all I wanted to do was pray. And I asked if they could get the church chaplain, the hospital chaplain for me, which they did. They took me into a quiet room. And she prayed with me, and she talked, and she was there with me for an hour. And I can't tell you the calm that came over me. I was exhausted, but the calm was absolutely amazing. After only 4 days, Cliff was allowed home. Simon and I were really worried. We thought, gosh, you know, that seems pretty a quick amount of time for us to be going back home. I was given pages and pages of information about, you know, what to look out for, and had masses of medication that I actually had to go and get. And I just felt an enormous pressure. All of a sudden, I was now his carer, and I felt like I just really didn't know what I was doing. Cliff was very anxious. He was not himself. He was short-tempered. He was demanding. There were just so many changes, and his character just wasn't Cliff. I was scared. I was really, really scared. And there were many times when Cliff sort of said to him, you know, "Why are you being so rude to Mum? Why are you behaving in this way?" On the fourth day home, Cliff came with me to a pharmacy to pick up some other medication that he needed. Believe you me, he was on so many tablets, I was losing count. And he dashed off to the toilet. And he came back and he went to the toilet again. And then on the way home, he said, I need to get in quick. And then he just kept going and going to the toilet. And eventually he was absolutely in agony and pleading with me to do something. My daughter-in-law took us off to casualty, but was convinced that we'd be waiting absolutely hours. We weren't. We were rushed through really quickly. He was put on a drip and he was told he had diabetes insipidus, which is a complication due to his surgery. In actual fact, he could have become very, very seriously ill. Again, he was in hospital for another 4 days. And at one point they had to dash him off for another MRI because he was getting headaches again. But fortunately, everything was okay and fine. I stayed most of the days at hospital with Cliff because he was incredibly anxious. But I found that time incredibly peaceful. We had quite a beautiful outlook. And I remember sitting there looking out and thinking, we're very lucky to have this care. We're very lucky to have had all this on hand. It was just a very quiet time of contemplation, really. We left after another 4 days with another set of medication. And this time again, I had to go and get the medication. And I couldn't get one important lot of tablets that Cliff really did need. It was serious medication that he needed. And we travelled around from pharmacy to pharmacy and all the pharmacies were closing. And I was beginning to get to the point where I was feeling so panic-stricken that I got onto the phone to the hospital and I was really quite rude. And I said, you know, you've let us go home. You haven't given us medication. We can't get it. The doctor was fabulous. Said, come back. We will. He worked everything. They are not allowed normally to give medication once the patients have left. But he did manage to get us that medication. So Cliff carried on okay for another 4 days. Then we were back to hospital again. This time round, his heart was racing. He was in terrible pain. He had very high blood pressure. But it was a panic attack he'd had. So he was fine. Back home, back to life at my son's. And he slowly started to recovering and getting himself stronger. Sadly, after brain surgery, you can't fly for 2 weeks, so we had to wait. And then the insurance company messed us around left, right and centre. They hadn't got things sorted. We had lots and lots of disputes and things with them. And eventually they got us sorted to get back home. During this time, the messages from folks back home were amazing. I can't believe some of the messages that were sent to me. It was just incredible. People who've never, ever texted me sent me messages. Some of you here now, you know who you are. I read those messages time and time again. They were what gave me strength. They were what lifted me up. They were what helped me to know that God was with me in all of this. On returning home, sadly, our poor dog Rexy had to be put to sleep as well. Cliff had been out, taking him out for walks, getting up his strength. I just couldn't believe it. I remember saying to Chris, what's happening? What's happening? What's the Lord doing to me? Why is this happening to me? Chris said to me, you know, the Lord's not doing anything to you, Deb. You know who's testing you. I thought, yeah, she's right. I'm not doing enough praying. I'm really not doing enough praying. During this time away, Philip was found sheltered accommodation. I know many of you helped him and because it was all very sudden. He was rushed into a house with nothing at all, nothing to live with. And Vanessa again loaded up her car, got lots of things, got him sorted. He then went into another home, and he's now moved into an abstinence house in Reigate, and he's doing really well. He's now back in full-time employment. He hasn't touched drink or drugs since May. But as you know, there's only that much away from the chance of that happening again. So we just keep praying every day that he will continue on that journey, that hopefully he will be turning the corner and will stay on the right path. And that's all we can really expect. I thank so many of you. I thank that I have my sister who did so much work for us while we were away. I thank my church here. Without you, don't know where I'd have been. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. So when we're in the dark, be reminded that when other people are waving around and worshipping God and everything is going fine, but you're in the dark, God is with you and other people are with you as well. Let's stand and close our service.